Hey, everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. How would you like to support your favorite podcast by buying an amazing t-shirt or an amazing poster, or by just visiting www.air-raid.net and donating to this fine, fine show? We could really use your help here, people. We need some more equipment for the dining room studios to make things sound better and to make things be better. So why don't you just go to air-raid.net and buy a sweet t-shirt? How's that? All right, enjoy the program. Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
I'm so not a raper.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
Oh, yeah, I like this idea.
This is episode 132.
Latina Fantastica.
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
It's gonna hurt a lot of it.
I am your host, Aaron Roden.
You don't want to get mixed up with a guy like me.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for listening this week. We've got a great show planned for you. Stephanie Drury, the woman, the myth, the legend, will be joining me here in the dining room studios here shortly. She is responsible for the website Stuff Christian Culture Likes. And also for a very funny podcast called Dong Teeny, and amongst other things, she's also responsible for the fake Twitter feed. I believe it's Fake Driscoll, or Fake Mark Driscoll. I don't know. Yeah, she's got a great life story, wonderful life story, and. I just had a wonderful time talking with her, and she has taken it upon herself to take on Mars Hill and Pastor Mark Driscoll. So interesting stuff. I tried to be non-biased, tried to really, really hard. I don't know if I succeeded at that. You be the judge. So I've got an issue here, guys. As I do every week. That's apparent now, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Aaron's got problems. That's what we should call this segment, this monologue. It's just my problems. The airing of grievances, right? I've got an issue. I am just not good at shopping for myself. And when I say shopping, I mean like clothes shopping, going out, finding clothing for my person. I'm really not good at it. I'll tell you one thing that I am very, very proficient at. It's getting in and getting out. I can do that with the greatest of ease, and it always makes me a little bit proud when I get in, get out, 15 minutes, and I've got, you know, five new shirts and maybe some socks and some underwear, maybe a pair of pants. I have done that before, by the way. That's not just pulling numbers out of thin air. That is real fact right there. 15 minutes, got a whole handful of shirts, like five shirts, pair of jeans, and some socks and some underwear. It was a fantastic day. Now I'll tell you what the problem is with that is that once you get in and get out, you are sacrificing certain things, and that certain thing being. If those clothes are going to fit right. It's becoming a huge problem with me. Now, one thing that I don't know if most guys realize this, but it's one thing that took me a while to realize is that different stores have different sizes. Like an extra large somewhere will not be the same as an extra large at this other place, right? Well, they should, you know, I mean... extra large should stay the same at the same store, right? Well, I had to go to Old Navy the other day I don't have a whole lot of like really warm clothes. And as I've stated before, I am riding my scooter in the morning, and it is blisteringly cold. And so I had to go and I had to get a sweatshirt, right? So I bought everything kind of oversized because I've had bad luck with this stuff in the past, and it's all shrunken up, you know? So I bought extra larges this time, walked in there, got in, got out, 10 minutes. It was fantastic. I even tried it on, and came home that night and washed all of it, dried all of it. None of it shrank. None of it shrank. I was, you know, the hope was is that it would shrink up one full size and then it would fit perfectly. And it did not do that. It did not do that. What is my problem? Now, did I not dry it on like a high enough setting or something? Please, please, somebody out there who knows the answer to this, who knows the key to shrinking up clothes or at least just buying clothes that maybe fit me. If you've got the answers, please email me, aaron@air-raid.net. Also, you can just email me your grievances. Maybe we'll read those on air the next episode. But yeah, it's just a constant frickin' sore. I don't even know. It's just terrible. I hate going to the store. I really do. Going to the mall is just the worst. It is the worst, you guys. I can think of maybe like one worse thing, and that includes the ending of like the movie Braveheart. Being disemboweled is probably worse than going to the mall, but I've never experienced that, so I can't say for sure. Okay? It's the worst. I hate going there. Therefore, I'm still wearing this oversized clothing, hoping that one day it will shrink. Sad. My life is just sad. But you know what? I've got a loving wife. I've got a great child. We had a great day today. It was wonderful. I wore my oversized clothing and it kept me warm, which is the whole point, right? Yeah, but I just kind of look like a 15-year-old thug now. Oh, man. Yeah. Complete with airbrush t-shirt, oversized t-shirt. Yeah, that hangs down to my knees. Yeah, anyway. Let's do this, shall we? Let's get a couple of plugs out of the way. I did want to tell you guys about this fantastic thing that I will be hosting here coming up. Cracklefest 2013. It's going to be fantastic, you guys. I did this last year. As part of the Emerald City Comic Con, I hosted Cracklefest 2012. They're at the Hard Rock Cafe in downtown Seattle. It's gonna be really, really great this year. Again, Friday, March 1st, 9 p.m. Tickets are $10. Doors at 8 o'clock. This is a 21-plus show. And get this. Guess who's going to be there. This is going to be fantastic, guys. I'm really excited about this. So Kirby Crackle, The Double Clicks, Nerds with Guitars, and Paul and Storm. Yes, that's right, Paul and Storm. It's going to be so fun. I've got some jokes that I'm going to be telling and doing my best to bring you some great, great music at the Hard Rock Cafe. That's Friday, March 1st as part of the Emerald City Comic Con, 9 p.m., tickets $10. Come and join us, Hard Rock Cafe, Seattle, Washington. It's going to be fantastic. Also, another thing coming up, guys, February 6th. The next Laugh Hole, headliner Brett Hamill, the comedian that we've had on this show before. I love this guy. He is so, so very funny. Here in Seattle once again at Chop Suey, February 6th, 9 p.m. That is also $10. So go to that. Show your support for your for the local Seattle comedy scene if you're here in town. Yeah. All right. Okay, guys, let's go to our first musical break. We're going to be featuring music by the band Widower. This song is Oh Catherine, My Catherine. We'll be back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us. Thank you. Welcome back to the Air Raid Podcast. That was Widower with the song My Catherine, or Oh Catherine, My Catherine. Great stuff, right? Joining me here in the dining room studios is one Miss Stephanie Drury.
Hello.
Of stuff Christian culture likes. You do so many things. Now, let me hang on. Stuff Christian culture likes. Dong Teeny.
Mm-hmm.
And fake Mark Driscoll.
Fake Driscoll.
Tweeting.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else? Did I leave anything out?
I have Twitter accounts. I have a lot of... I work full time. I have a desk job so I can be on the internet a lot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a secret to my success.
I actually tried to make a fake Twitter account.
Oh, yeah.
A couple months ago. It was right after a story about China broke on the news. Which and I was like, oh, I'm going to get ahead of this. You know, there was already, 400 different fake China, Twitter accounts.
Wow. Yeah, I'm lucky because I got fake Driscoll, but there's also a fake Pastor Mark and fake Mark Driscoll, but they totally like Mark Driscoll.
Yeah.
They kind of were kissing his ass.
You got to really jump on that thing. On
I
that
guess
bandwagon
so.
Really quick.
I guess Because,
like,
so.
You know, when, like, Hurricane Sandy came through, like, there were, like, three or four... different like Hurricane Sandy Twitter feeds.
Yeah.
You know? And some of them were jokey, you know, but they had like, 10,000 followers like
How
that.
How does that happen?
I don't know. That's why I created the China one. But I think it's got like four followers
no,
and
all
I
your
never
names
followed
were taken.
Yeah, I never followed up with any of
I'll
it.
I'll follow you.
Yeah. It's at China, yo. I think that's it. It's China. It's China, yo.
I'll have fake Driscoll follow you.
Thanks. Well, welcome. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here to finally get to talk with you when it's not in like a really crowded Naked City brewery.
Yeah.
So you do this thing, stuff Christian culture likes. Actually, you know what? Before we get into that,
mm-hmm.
I have to ask you one question.
Sure.
The cake.
Which part?
Your wedding cake.
Oh, my wedding cake.
Why in God's name?
I know.
How many layers of cake was
there? Probably six layers of cake. And
it was like 7 feet tall.
As many equal cakes of roses. And I'll tell you the story behind that. Well,
okay.
Number one is I got married in Texas. I grew up in Arkansas, but went to college in Texas. And I'm kind of Southern like that. I didn't think twice about, yeah, of course, let's have a gigantic cake. And beyond that, my husband and I are both preacher's kids and our parents were both like no alcohol at the wedding. Like the very Baptist, that kind of.
Really?
Yeah. No alcohol at the wedding. And I'm like, damn it. You know, no alcohol. We're not going to have any dancing. So let's just put all the money in the cake. And so I made the cake. It ended up being bigger than I thought. It was like 7 feet high.
It was huge.
It was
you posted,
gigantic.
You put, and the reason I know about this is because there was a picture that was posted on your, like,
I post it every year on our anniversary. I put it on Facebook and people are like, you are the reason the terrorists hate us.
I think, like, that may have been what I wrote. Yeah.
Something, everyone says that. And
so
I
how much of that, how much of that cake was eaten?
There were like 500 people at the wedding and I think maybe a third of the cake got
Holy
touched.
Shit.
I know.
You guys had a huge gathering.
We kind of did. It was mainly my parents' friends.
Yeah, yeah. Is that like a normal thing for,
yeah,
like?
Yeah, it was normal.
I guess having pastors as parents, like, that's like your whole congregation is going to come to that.
The
right?
whole, yep, and it's not exactly a small town. We got married in Wichita Falls, Texas, which is like 100,000 people, but uh-huh. I feel like my parents know half the people who live there, so it's just kind of like a. I don't want to say society thing, but weddings are kind of a big deal. Like, they're very formal there.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And just my parents are very Southern. So everything had to be proper. And, they didn't even like that. I wanted to get married at 2:22 in the afternoon. And we put that on the invitation. Like, they had a problem with that. Cause that was kind of cheeky.
Why?
Well, because
what's
so
the significance of 2:22?
We just thought it would be funny.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah. Why not? So just even that, but yeah, we got married and moved straight to Seattle. Like, I think that I was kind of...
Oh, really? So you guys... Mm-hmm. And when was that?
This was in 98.
98.
December of 98.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So we've been married 14 years.
Wow, nice.
It's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. How's it going?
It's going good.
Okay,
it's,
good.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, you see our tweets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And David's off. He's doing the blackjack ball.
Got invited to the blackjack ball by Max Rubin, I guess, is who David describes him to me as, the Abe Lincoln of Card County.
Wow.
Like, kind of one of the founding fathers, or not, that's a stupid analogy, but, you know, just like one of
the, you know, from the movie.
From the yeah. Spielberg movie. So he kind of pioneered card counting. I guess card counting is like, maybe 40 years old, like, where people are kind of doing it to really work over the casinos
a
legal way.
Yeah, yeah.
So David, my husband, was on this team where they kind of took the casinos for, I think it was like, it was over $1 million that all combined over the course of about 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. Like, they used the MIT model, but as a result of that, they get invited. They were, you know, on the, because Max Rubin, this Abe Lincoln character, now, he is the supervisor of security for a lot of casinos. And so, he had David and his team members on his radar, watching them, you know, I know who you guys are. You guys are all from the same city. We're kind of on to you. I'm going to make friends with you. So, that's kind of what they have to end up doing. And so he invites them to this thing every year. And, David's like, he goes, I am totally the Tom Cruise of Card County. he says it's a bunch of older autistic men.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are super rich and have super young, hot girlfriends. And the way you get into this particular blackjack ball is you have to have a bottle of champagne that was comped to you by a casino. And it has to be like a over $500 bottle of champagne. Like, it's, you know, as one of your... that's kind of the sign that you are such a good blackjack player. That
oh,
they
I see.
You
I see.
This stuff, so.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
so do you guys ever go down there? Like, I mean,
he does. I work.
Still?
We have kids. Yeah. You know what? He's kind of, the team disbanded. And so he's not doing it as much, but he goes down to teach blackjack boot camps, which, people will pay, you know, $1,000 for 2 days to come in.
Whoa.
And, yeah. Be taught over the course of 2 days to play blackjack.
So he's still making a living. This.
Sort of. Yeah, it's because as he was playing, he was getting in a lot of hours. They were paid hourly, and so that whether you won or lost, you weren't personally invested in the money. Like, you could win $10,000 one night, and it's kind of like, well, too bad, you know, that's for the team. But if you lost $10,000, then that was good, you know. No skin off your nose. So
wow,
yeah. So that as he got recognized, he was backed off more and more, and they're like, can't come into this casino. He's been kicked out of every casino in Vegas numerous times, and he goes back in disguise a lot when he does go back. So that only works for a little while. He has rad stories of walking into a casino and then seeing, like, behind the pit, a fax machine spitting out a photo of his face where
really
yeah where the other casinos like watch out for this guy. So,
whoa,
yeah. Whoa. He's got really good stories. So he's writing a book right now about his blackjack adventures.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
God, you guys are like the, you're very artistic.
You're, or we're bored.
You
gotta,
or you're just very bored. Yeah. Yeah. So where did the whole like stuff Christian culture likes things start?
It started, this was in.
Take me back.
Okay. I'll take you back to the year 2008. When I was on a road trip with my friends, Simone and Greg, and they were like total, you know, atheists, but they were so curious about how the election was happening, and all of the Christian fundamentalist Bible Belt people were so behind McCain.
That's McCain, was, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Can you remember? So they're asking me, why are people, again, these people who call themselves Christians, for the war and against abortion? And I'm like, well, let me tell you, like, I come from that world. Like, I know I can explain this to you. So we're having this road trip, and it was so much fun, like, being able to explain it to them. And around the same time, the Stuff White People Like book came out, and that website was a big deal. Yeah. So I got back and I off this road trip, and I'm like, I could totally do the same thing about Christian culture. So come to find out there was already a blog called Stuff Christians Like. And mm-hmm. the funny thing about that is that it is exactly Christian culture. It's exactly everything that I'm kind of taking down with my Stuff Christian culture.
Yeah, yeah,
so that
yeah.
guy had already cornered the market, because he doesn't distinguish between American Christians, American Christianity, and, you know, Christians on the other side of the world. He's like saying things like, oh, Christians like to wear V-necks and white belts and you know, just kind of like things that wouldn't resonate
across
the board. But mine's specific to this American brand of Christianity that... it's pretty gross in a lot of ways. Like I said, with the being okay with the death penalty and being against abortion, but supporting the war and
not
seeing any kind of discrepancies. So.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So is that what kind of like led you astray from religion then?
Yeah, it's horrible. I think I was pretty tormented growing up, like having these questions but not being allowed to question, and anything you brought up. Like, they wouldn't hang with you very long. Like, I'm like, now, why exactly is this bad? Well, it's just because. I'm like, can you show me in the Bible where it says? Well, no, but but this
well,
is what
this
what
means. Age? What age are you starting to ask these
probably
questions?
Probably seven.
Are you serious?
Seven. Yeah, and my kids do it too. Yeah, you just met them, an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
And they ask those questions, and I'm like, I know, right? Which is what I wish someone had said to me a long time ago.
But
from a young age, I kind of had this torment going on where I'm like, okay, there's something about the idea of God that I'm really compelled by, but it makes no logical sense. And so I was always kind of existing in the space and being forced to go to church. Every Saturday night, I would pretend I was sick so I wouldn't have to go the next day. Usually didn't work, you know, but it was just like a big force in my life. I hated this religion thing. And had all these questions, but I felt like there was something, I couldn't articulate it, but I wanted someone to say, yeah, these questions are valid, and like there's something mysterious maybe behind all this. Mm-hmm, so if anything, I think with my blog, I'm pointing out that they don't do that, that there isn't any kind of acknowledgement of stuff we don't know. They want to know. They want to know black and white. You do this, that's good. You don't do that, that's bad. And
Yeah,
and I don't think that's at all what, you know, Christianity is supposed to be about, what Jesus had to say, from what I understand. So,
Yeah, I didn't grow up religious at all. Yeah. And my dad, like, and I've told this story many, many times on this show, like, my dad was the type of guy, like, on Saturday morning or Sunday mornings when, like, the weird offshoot cartoons would end because it was Sunday, not Saturday. And like Jimmy Swaggart would come on or something like that. he would basically turn on Jimmy Swaggart. He'd leave the TV on and turn it up and be like, you see this guy, Aaron? This guy is a liar.
Ooh.
And he would just berate Jimmy Swaggart for the whole morning until he would pound it into my head. Like, you do not believe this man. You do not, anything. Because I think my dad had a weird experience with being involved in a Christian cult.
Yeah, he must have.
In the 60s. And
And
so he was very adamant about showing me, like, you know, this kind of stuff and how wrong it was, you know?
Yeah.
So I never really got the the religious experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because my parents were adamantly
protect you from that.
Yeah, because
they'd been harmed by it.
Yeah, and they were adamantly atheists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so nothing would ever really come up about Christianity and stuff. So I find like stories like yours very, very interesting, because the journey where you start to like question stuff is not only amazing, but kind of scary too, right?
It's so scary.
Yeah.
Because you're taught that hell is real. Like I was taught that the Bible or the book of Revelation, where they talk about hell and the end times, like that was literal truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like that'll do something to you. Like you're like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I can to avoid that. Like,
yeah,
but there's always just like, you know, my intuition, I guess, is what was acting up for me going, is this really the case? And so with my kids, I'm trying to teach them to trust their intuition. I was never taught that.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of taught the opposite. And I said recently that Christian culture is terrified of their own humanity. And that's why they have to make these rules. That's why they have a big thing where like, you know, definitely no sex before marriage, but they also have a thing in kind of a subculture of Christian culture where you don't want to kiss until the altar on your wedding day. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
What?
I have a big post about it. It really just is a testament to how scared they are of their own humanity. And so I want to teach my kids, you need to listen to your intuition, to that little voice. What are your feelings? You pay attention to how your stomach feels, how your heart feels.
Yeah.
Cause I think that there's a lot of truth there. I want to validate their questions.
So what was it like when you started to kind of stray from that? Do you mind talking about
this? No, I'd love to talk about it. It was really scary because you feel like the ground is kind of giving out from under you because everything that you claimed to know was true and kind of just took for granted. You're like, this has to rearrange my whole worldview now. And, it is terrifying.
You're a pastor's kid.
You are afraid of how they're going to receive it if they have any idea. And I get so many emails from people who, if they're not pastor's kids, their parents are very religious. And Dave Bazan was on here last week. And it's a similar story where his mom is always praying for his soul, you know, convinced that he's going to hell because he says he's not a Christian anymore. And,
right,
I mean, that's a really devastating feeling when you've grown up. You know, you love your parents. You want them to approve of you. And so I think that that's definitely a scary thing. But when I first started to question, I feel like things got a lot better and they also got a lot worse, if that makes
like
any sense.
Like family life got a lot worse, right?
Family life, you know, they didn't really hang with my questioning. Like we kind of stopped talking about it. And at a certain point, they kind of disowned me.
That's
okay if you aren't uncomfortable with me saying that.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I think it has more to do with their issues rather than my religious journey at all. But I kind of started to say, more on the relational side, I'm like, okay, I'm grown up now. I can't have you shaming me. You know, I have kids, I have a job, I have a great husband. I can't have you criticizing me constantly. And so that was kind of the boundary
made. What would they say to you?
They would, every time we talked on the phone, there was a good chance that I would end up just like crying because they would tell me that whatever I was doing was wrong. Like something that like, and down to like how they didn't like my hair. Like
what?
I know. So that was rough. And
I'm laughing at your pain.
It's absolutely
here.
Ridiculous. But, It was good that I was able to like, I went to therapy and they're like, this is how you set boundaries.
It
took me like 2 years to be able to think I deserve to set boundaries. And
right.
So, and they're like, watch out for the fallout. You know, have to be prepared that this might be what happened. But, because of therapy, I was able to really, do kind of some soul searching with the help of someone who'd already gone through it. And from that, I kind of started stuff Christian culture likes because I was finally at a point where I could ask the questions and sleep at night at the same time. Yeah. But for a while I couldn't. So that's what happened.
That's insane. And it sounds, I mean, to me being an outsider from this, like it kind of sounds like it's totally, comparable to like what people go through when they come out to their parents.
Yes.
Like
I relate
you know,
to
homosexuality
that so
in maybe a more conservative family.
as well. Yeah, they're like, you're going to hell. You're living a sinful lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I'm praying that Jesus will change your heart. Like, it's kind of the same thing that they do to their gay children and their non-Christian children.
Man. So what was your husband going through at this time, too? I mean, were his parents kind of doing the same thing to him? Or
His parents, they don't really talk about that stuff. They don't talk about politics. And I think that's how they're able to keep a cordial relationship.
Right, right.
They're definitely conservative, but they're much more accepting. So that's really good. But he was pretty supportive of me and all my questioning. And he's like, yeah, I get it. He would still
call himself an,
he calls a, himself a Christian still.
A Christian. Okay.
Yeah. And I don't feel comfortable saying that about myself.
You would consider yourself an agnostic.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Someone asked me recently, how would you categorize yourself? And I thought about it for a long time and I'm like, I guess I'm an agnostic, but I definitely practice Christianity because we're part of a church that I really love.
Uh-huh.
And I go to St. James a lot and cause I work for an emergency room. So I kind of will like do some intercessory prayer for people who I see there and, just kind of to get it off my own back because it really weighs on me since I've had kids. I think seeing all that stuff, just makes me so sad. So I'm like, this is a way I can kind of give it over, but I don't claim to know anything for sure.
Right.
And I don't know if Christians definitely have to say they know, but, that's been my experience with Christians is they're like, yeah, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is real. And Jesus rose from the dead. And I'm like, I don't know, but I'm compelled by it.
It was a long time ago.
That was a really
long
time ago. And I wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm drawn to it. The kind of that mystical stuff, even new age stuff.
And, well, is it kind of, I mean, it, cause you still go to church, you bring your children to church as well. Right. Is it more of a, like a community sense that you're, or community feel that you're getting from that as well? That's got to be a large part,
a big
right?
part of it. Yeah. Cause this church we're at now, we've been going there almost 2 years and I love it because it feels like an AA meeting. That's what I always say. It's small. Like we sit at tables.
Yeah.
The first time I went, they had a picture of like a painting of a big black Jesus. And I love
serious?
An ethnic Christ. Like for some reason I hate the white European Jesus with the blue eyes.
Did he have a machete or something like that too? Or what?
No, he's peaceful.
Oh, okay.
So I love that about it. And we just sit at tables and they'll kind of talk. And then after someone will talk, we're supposed to sit and just discuss at our tables, like what's going on in your life and how does what this pastor guy said resonate with you? Where do you have dissonance with it?
Mm-hmm.
It's very relational, I guess is the word.
Okay. So what type of church is that?
It's technically some kind of Baptist church.
Really?
It's like, some kind of sect of Baptist. And I think that's only so that we can meet in the building. So,
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a school here, in Seattle called the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology. And the people who graduated from that started this.
Okay.
So, and that's actually where I got my therapy from, was someone who graduated from there. And they were very validating of like the whole person, the psychological realm, as well as your questioning. And their view was like, if God is real, he can handle your anger.
Yeah.
And which was really nice to hear. I'd never heard that before.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
I like that take. And I tell the kids, I'm like, if people ever tell you anything about God that makes you uncomfortable, come talk with me about it. And, just don't take that as face value necessarily.
Right. Right. Yeah. And they go to a public school?
They do,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do they hear, do like, they bring back stuff to you from like what they're hearing at public school and stuff like
that? Yeah, they'll tell me about, you know, curse words they learned and, and you know, and
you're like,
kinda,
oh, that's a good one. Yeah,
good exactly. I'm like, okay, that's kind of funny. Yeah, I think that they're not too scared to bring stuff to me, which is how I want to keep it going. And my son, it's been a year or two actually since he did this, but he's like, what's sex? I keep hearing people talking about sex and I'm like, okay, here we go. And so I try to explain it to him and try not to have any kind of weird vibe with it. And, but then he goes, so when did you first have sex? And I'm like, all right.
I do not.
So
I
he's
don't
very comfortable want, asking me questions.
I don't want that question. I don't.
He's like, he's like, what's birth control? Are you on birth control? What's the story? I'm like, oh God, let's learn some boundaries here. No, but I mean, I'm glad that he asked me that he feels comfortable.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. Well, so one last question before we go to the break. What's the difference between like, cause you were at a, like in Texas at these Southern Baptists, is that the right term for it? Southern Baptist, churches. And then you come up here to Seattle and start going to church up here.
Yeah.
Like what's there's gotta be some crazy dichotomy between the, like the churches in the South and the churches in the North, right?
It's so interesting. You would think that, but Christian culture is so pervasive that there are like identical pockets all over the country.
I guess I'm just thinking of like, because I have been to church a couple times. I went with mm-hmm. my friend Brian when I was little. It was a Lutheran church. I don't remember what it was called, but it was over in Kingston. And it always seemed like kind of loose, you know, much more loose than what I expected to be in, you know, mm-hmm. from what you see on TV and things like that. But uh-huh. I don't remember ever paying attention to it because Brian's older brother would sit there with the Bible in the pew and just write in the margins, like draw penises in the margins and stuff. And then when I would laugh, he would hit me in the leg.
How old were you?
So that's my church experience. I was like 10.
Why would he hit you?
Because he was an asshole.
He sure was.
He was much older than us. So, yeah, he used to just beat the crap out of us all the time.
Well, when we first moved up here to Seattle, we went to a Presbyterian church, and Dave Bazan was already going there.
Oh, okay.
That's how
you guys met.
Last week. Yeah, we met there. So he was like kind of our Bible study leader for a couple of years before he abandoned his faith, which was scandalous.
I bet. Yeah, so when you abandoned, well, I guess do you consider you abandoning the faith?
No, or? I think I'm in process, and I'll kind of
you're
I've
in process
used, I've
to abandon
to
it right now.
Being in process, like wrestling with it, like because there's something about it that I can't completely write off, and so I'm kind of always exploring that. Like I read a lot. You should see the side of my friend DW he saw my bed the other day, like my side of the bed. He's like, you have a problem because I have all these theology books and just because I'm just really curious about that stuff. So,
yeah. So it's still, you're just working it out.
Yeah.
You're still working it out.
I'm still working it out.
How many years have you been working it out?
Probably 6 or 7. Okay. Like technically, definitely working it out. And now I have like a little community with the stuff Christian culture likes.
Yeah.
Stuff where people will write me and say, thank you for allowing me to question this stuff. I was like, I had people say that they were actually suicidal before they found our community.
Really?
Which I can understand because, like I was saying, the ground totally drops out from under you. And if your family doesn't agree with you, isn't supporting you,
then
that can like cause a super huge crisis. So that's been really, really good to hear.
Well, right on. I like that. I like that. I like that you're helping people.
I like that too, because I didn't start out to help people. Right. It just happened.
Yeah. All right, let's go to our second musical break. We are featuring music by the band Widower, a new band here in Seattle that you guys should definitely check out. This song is called This Mess Again, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Travels, look who walked through the door with eyes you've known, glow so close in a tone you've touched with yours. And I'll gladly take back the time where I snapped and told you I don't love you no more. It was a lie at the time, even saints changed their mind, but woman, I'm pretty damn sure. Still
right, we are back. That was let me grab it. That was Widower. I knew it was Widower. But that was the song "This Mess Again," and we are back here in Dining Room Studios. And joining me today is the lovely Stephanie Drury, the purveyor of stuff Christian culture likes, which is very hard to say, by the way.
You just need more practice.
I think I do. I think I said it. I said it pretty nice,
yeah.
Right there, right?
Yeah, that was perfect.
And also part host of the podcast Dong Teeny.
Mm-hmm.
And also the purveyor of the Twitter feed, Fake Mark Driscoll.
Fake Driscoll.
Fake Driscoll. Oh, okay. Yeah. At Fake Driscoll.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. So, and that's what I wanted to get into. Before we left for the second musical break, we were kind of talking about how you started Stuff Christian Culture Likes and got into that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the posts on there could be construed as hurtful.
They
I think,
certainly
right?
could, yeah. And they are.
They certainly could, yes.
I get a lot of unhappy emails.
Yeah, yeah. How do you first of all, how do you deal with that kind of stuff? Like, does when you started this website and you started to get maybe what could be called hate mail,
mm-hmm.
did that kind of pierce your skin a little bit?
Oh, it totally hurts my feelers.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hurts your feelers.
Which is funny because people are like, gosh, why are you so sensitive? And how can you write this blog when you're so sensitive? And I'm like, I think I can write it because I'm so sensitive. Like I can access all my anger and it kind of comes out in this, hopefully I'm doing it ironically in kind of a parody
way.
I think so.
But it's harder in written form, mm-hmm. especially on the internet, mm-hmm. to do sarcasm because a lot of people aren't going to get sarcasm, right?
They definitely, or they get it so hard that they feel so personally attacked by it.
Right. And, yeah.
And so when I get these disgruntled emails, I like to make them the email of the day on the Facebook page.
Oh God.
Which is, I know it's almost not fair because I have like all these, this, you know, all these like special forces, like airstrikers that come in and they will just attack them, like take them down. As soon as I make the email of the day, they're like,
oh no,
fuck that guy.
Oh man.
And just like so smart. These people are so smart and just take them apart. And it's kind of like gotten to the point where I will email the person and go, I'm sorry if that was a little rough, if they were too mean about your email of the day. But I mean, it was a brutal, you know, kind of a rough email, but
yeah.
If people can approach it with curiosity, I really appreciate that. If they can say, why do you do this blog? And because my answer is always, I feel like whatever American Christian culture is on about is totally different from what Jesus of Nazareth was on about.
Right.
And so that's
right.
What the whole point is.
That's the whole point.
Like I have a post on how Christian culture really likes to go to impoverished countries and take pictures of their well-fed selves, like with small, brown, emaciated children, and then bring them back and do
like the commercials, shows. Right?
Exactly like the commercials. And they just love that. They're like, you see like these, you know, totally well-to-do Westerners walking around in this impoverished village and they have no shame about taking it back and going, look how we are saving, you know, the unsaved savages from,
mm-hmm.
we're giving them the great white hope of our religion. We're bringing it to them. And it's just so presumptive. And I think Jesus would have been really pissed off about that. So, I mean, I have to call that out, I feel, on some level. And they don't like that.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's not completely my problem.
Yeah, totally. But how do you I mean, you know, have you gotten to the point now where you can just kind of brush that stuff off too?
Or is it still, you know, I don't want to get hardened to it. Like, I don't want to be someone who won't hear that they're wrong. Like, I want to be able to be open to if I am being an asshole, mm-hmm. too much. Yeah, I've had interactions with people recently where I'm like, I feel like what you did was kind of hurtful or whatever. And the way they responded was not good. Like, they're like, well, that's just your blah, blah. You know, I would, it's so much better, so much more productive if the person, and this includes me, like, can kind of swallow their pride and go, okay, where are you coming from? How did what I did affect you?
Mm-hmm.
Because it always comes from a deeper story.
Like open up a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Rather than just kind of, but it's human nature to react that way, to react with anger because you feel like your core, something really important to you, like your core identity has been threatened in some way. And that's the only reason that you would get that mad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then there's like nothing productive comes of that.
Yeah.
So I hope that I would be able to talk about it with people, but I mean, I definitely get sad. And
I really like that. I really like your point of view on that because what it just made me think of is like, yeah, why would you want to be somebody who would become hardened to that kind of stuff? Cause then you'd just be like, you'd probably just turn into a sarcastic asshole. Like at that point, like even in like, you know, real life, just walking around, like not dealing with anything, you know?
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of the point is like, I feel like, for example, my kids have a lot to teach me.
Oh yeah.
And, I was not raised with that. I wasn't raised with my parents, like wanting to learn from me or my point of view, but like, and even the people who would attack me online, like they've got something that they have this, like a story that I know that we could connect over if we can just get to that point. So,
yeah. So do you think you ever go too far?
I don't know. I probably, but it's kind of, that keeps it interesting. Like, And I want to be able to give myself a margin and other people a margin to screw up. Mm-hmm. Like, I posted stuff that was too sarcastic before, probably in the not too distant past. and then I felt kind of dumb about it later.
Yeah.
Whereas a couple of years ago, I would have really beat myself up for it and felt really bad and probably got defensive. This time I was able to kind of go, yeah, oh, well, you know, I'm human.
Right.
And everyone
right.
can probably understand, can relate to that. I'm not some like demigod who is going to get all this stuff right all the time.
Right, right.
Yeah. Just because, I mean, I do have like these lovely readers of my blog who kiss my ass a little bit and they will defend me like crazy when I probably don't always need defending. So
yeah,
I want to be aware of that too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's something that I need to get better at because we get bad emails and we get good emails.
Yeah.
And I always am just like, oh yeah, the good emails. Yeah. Those are bee's knees.
Oh yeah, there's nothing better.
You know,
and there's nothing worse than the bad feedback because you're so invested in your project, and you know,
I know
your podcast.
Put a lot
here,
of time. Put a lot of time.
It's
and
your
energy
personality. It's your story. Yeah. It's all this time and effort, time away from your wife and your daughter. Yeah, so of course it's gonna touch something really core if you hear something bad about it.
Right.
So I don't know. I just want to take that generous approach more with my naysayers.
I like that. I'm learning from you right now. I'm learning from you.
Well.
So on the subject of taking it too far, I want to talk to you because I know, like I said in the beginning, I know very little about Christianity. I know very little about religiousness, if that's even a real word.
Religiosity,
yeah. So this, you've basically created your own personal war against the local mega church Mars Hill, right? Mm. So I want to talk to you a little bit about this because I want to know where it started where you see it going.
Let's go.
I know you're very invested in this subject.
I kind of tend to be.
Yeah. So where did the this war start?
It's okay.
And maybe tell us, give us a little background, like,
yeah.
Cuz Dave, your husband, used to go to Mars Hill, correct?
No. He didn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he didn't. We
totally wrong.
Yeah, we visited together one time, probably in 2000 or 2001.
You were thinking of going there?
We were just kind of curious because a lot of our friends had been going. Rosie Thomas was into it. She is a local singer, whatever.
Okay.
But yeah, she was into it, and we're like, God, Rosie's really cool. Why is she like this misogynist church? Because that's all we'd heard. So we went, and I was so offended. We were so offended by what Mark Driscoll, the pastor, was saying. We're like, we are never going back. Like he was saying, he actually said in that sermon something like, the wife needs to have sex with the lights on if that's what the husband wants. And I'm like, you don't say that in from the pulpit in front of thousands of people. You don't know the sexual trauma history of all the women in the audience.
Yeah.
Like statistically, 40% of these women have been sexually assaulted in some capacity. And so to say something like that, as if it's gospel truth, as if God, the God of the universe wants you to know this.
Is there any part of the Bible that says something like that? I mean, I guess it's.
Yeah. Right. It's all about context. You can make the Bible say anything in the right context, but, there's Mars Hill is very much about gender roles and submission, and they've backed off from that language recently because they're coming under a lot of fire for it. But
not just from you, but from
not just from it. Yes, from there's a lot of people who have a lot of problems with it. And I hear from them, and so I feel like I made pretty good friends with people who are very very deep into Mars Hill and then left. And then what happened to them afterwards? They were kind of shunned by the community and like told not to talk to them. So that's like another red flag, right? Like, do you want to be, is it really a church? If you decide not to go to that church anymore, the members are told not to even look at you or talk to you if they see you at the grocery store. Like,
now how is that, how does that happen? Like, do they, during a sermon, are they told of, like, people who
have left? No, it's all on this network called The City, I think. It's, like, this private network, and my friend Andrew, it was almost,
online.
Yeah. And so they will send out your church discipline records. Like, Andrew confessed that he had slept with someone. You know, you're not supposed to be doing that if you're not married. So he confessed it and then was told, you should look this up. It's a blog called Jesus Needs New PR. And,
oh, God.
Which is kind of a rad name. and so, because he does. so my friend Andrew.
It's funny because it's true, right?
Yeah. Marcel's giving Jesus bad PR by telling my friend Andrew, okay, you need to write down your whole sexual history with women, all the bad thoughts you've had, and you're not to contact this person, your fiance or whoever you had been sleeping with. You're to break your engagement. You're, like, just way overstepping this stuff. And then when he said, I'm not going to sign these documents, this is kind of weird and not Christian, they're like, okay, you're out. And then they put his discipline documents, from what I understand, on the church website so that everyone could see. Like, kind of these intimate details, you know, like,
really?
Just very overstepping all kinds of boundaries, very control oriented, I guess, is what it comes down to. Like, the fact that they want to control that sort of thing.
And Mars Hills is really big now, too, right? I mean, do you happen to know, like, what the attendance is?
I don't, but it's, you know, tens of thousands.
Yeah, it's
got to
be, right?
And they do this thing where they have satellites where Mark Driscoll will preach from the Ballard campus, which is the main campus.
Right. But, that's a real big one, too.
Yeah, the real big one. And they pre-tape his sermons, like, on Thursday, and they edit them all weekend. And then on Sunday, they beam them out to all these satellite churches, which are just buildings around Seattle and also moving down into Oregon and California now. But, like, they'll just gather in these buildings, have a worship team, but then watch on the screen Mark Driscoll preach. And that's just, there's something about that rings really hollow to me because, like,
well, it reminds me of the bigger, like what I was saying in the beginning too, it reminds me of, like, the big, like, televangelists.
Yes.
Right?
Jimmy.
Doesn't that, I mean, it's like the sparkly shirts and like
performance art.
Performance art.
Theater art.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
like, because like the Hebrew word for pastor is shepherd. Like, that's like someone who I guess is supposed to know you and know your story. And that's what I feel like I have in this little church community that I'm in now. Like, I feel like I have that very much. And I feel like the pastor knows what's up with us because it's small enough to where we are absolutely a community. And if someone's having a hard time, then everyone knows it. And they're kind of on your ass and they're like, what can I do to help? And they're concerned, like, they give a shit. But when your church is that big, that can't happen. Like, Pastor Mark can't pastor you the way that he probably should.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So what, okay. So, You make this Twitter feed,
yeah.
And like,
so,
I mean, when did the Twitter feed come into play?
When I really started getting uncomfortable with Mars Hill is when I started group therapy and heard stories from women who attended Mars Hill who
this
were
is,
saying
this is back.
This
back.
Is about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and these women were, you know, going through really hard times and just in all this emotional distress and saying, I go to Mars Hill, but They want me to quit my job. They want me to have these babies. And now I have these kids, but I'm home all the time. I'm really depressed. And they're telling me to pray harder and to submit better to my husband. And that just made me so angry. I'm like, there's nothing in the Bible about that. Like, that's so unloving, like to treat someone's depression in that way, to say, submit more and pray harder. Like, you need to be rallying around this person, getting her professional help. And they were saying, you can only go to therapists that are special Mars Hill counselors. Because I guess they don't want their dirty laundry getting out.
Right.
So
right.
these women were like shaking because they're at these therapy sessions, these group therapy sessions that were not under the Mars Hill umbrella, but they're like, I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what to do.
Now let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Like, I mean, could that just be, you know, that one woman's experience?
It was several.
Several. Yeah. Okay. Could that just be their experience?
I
mean, is that happening to everybody?
It's
there,
happening or? To so many people. I'm getting emails from so many people who are like, I went to Mars Hill, Albuquerque. This is what happened to me. I went to an Acts 29 church in St. Louis. This is what happened. Like, Acts 29 is this umbrella that Mars Hill is under. So
oh, really?
It seems
so
to
it's
be
like
an
a
epidemic. Yeah.
They're underneath the corporate.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Yeah. That's so weird. And it seems like, because Mars Hill is very like, it's like when they first I remember when they first moved into Seattle, they were like the hip new church for like the younger crowd, right?
They are. There was a big Salon article a few years ago about that. And you should go back and read it, because the woman who, one of the women who talked a lot in it, like, she was disciplined really severely for having said anything against them.
Wow.
Like, they, I don't know the details of what they did for sure. So
has it gotten physical?
Say. No, no, no.
Okay.
But pretty, you know, emotional.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe physical. I don't know where they'd stop, because
right.
People have told me, they're like, you have this fake Driscoll account and you need to watch out for your personal safety. This is, well, I've had
now,
a lot of people
from,
say
is,
that. I don't
right.
know.
Is
I
that,
don't know.
Is that because, like, people, like, maybe the followers will take it too personally
and
lash out? Or
possibly.
Wow.
Yeah, they're very protective of them. So that's super interesting. But so I started this fake Driscoll thing after hearing these women in the therapy sessions telling me these stories. So I'm like, I have to see what's going on. So I started listening to all these Mark Driscoll sermons, reading everything I could that he'd done. So I got to know his voice pretty well. And so now I can kind of tweet like the way he does. And the biggest compliment is when people are like, I did not know if that was really Pastor Mark or fake Driscoll. That's the best. And the other day he tweeted on the inauguration day, he goes, I'm praying today for Barack Obama as he places his hand on the Bible he doesn't believe in.
Oh, I
saw that. To
take
an oath to a God that he doesn't know. He likely doesn't know. So everyone was like, I thought that was fake Driscoll, but it was really,
the
man.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know, it just writes itself.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you ever talked with Mark? I mean,
no.
Has he reached out to you or?
No, he's blocked me like in every single capacity.
Yeah.
I think that he has Twitter handlers. Like, he said something a few months ago on Twitter that someone who had gone to his church said, yeah, they took his Twitter account away from him after that. And now they have a PR guy do it.
Oh, really?
He said something that made people mad.
Oh,
but he doesn't take well to meeting with people. You know, he's too busy for that. And if you go to the website and try to like figure out how you can contact him, they're like, are you with a press agency? Are you media outlet? Like, that's kind of all he'll talk to, is what I understand.
Yeah. So what have you looked into how much money he makes from this and
they
stuff like that?
They do not disclose any of the pastor salaries.
I would imagine.
And so you know it's big.
But yeah.
That's what
but like, no, but I mean, he's got to live somewhere around here, right?
He does. Yeah. People have told me he lives in kind of Northgate area, Haller Lake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I hear things. I don't know what's true, but I guess he lives in Seattle, and I hear that he's kind of, you know, under, like, he's got security for his house. Cause
I would imagine
people pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. And where, so we can go to your website, stuffchristiancultureLikes.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also hear your fabulous podcast that you do with Simone Turkington, right? Called Dongtini at dongtini.com. And where can we follow you on Twitter?
At Stephanie Drury. And I also tweet at stuffccLikes.
Yeah.
Stuff Christian Culture Likes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for coming here and being so candid and talking with me about this stuff.
Aww,
I really appreciate
asking.
It.
Yeah.
It was very interesting.
Yay.
You taught me some things.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel smarter.
Yay.
Constantly learning about religion on this show. We had Nick Allers on a little while back.
Oh,
he did,
I love Nick.
You know, he talked about being a Jehovah's Witness and stuff.
Yeah,
and boy,
he's got
an amazing story as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and it also made me very jealous, that cake at your wedding. I mean to bring this back up, but
sure.
Like, I think if we're to renew our vows someday, if Maria and I are going to renew our vows, we're going to have a 7-foot cake.
And the terrorists are going to hate you.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, thank you very much, Stephanie.
Thanks, Aaron.
You can follow us at Air Raid Net on Twitter, and also go check out our Facebook page, air-raid.net, and of course on the web at www.air-raid.net. We've got a lot of great things coming up for you guys this next month, so stay with us on that. And we've got t-shirts for sale and posters, and nobody has bought t-shirts in a little bit, so we've still got those $25 gift certificates to Olive Garden, which I am re-gifting from my uncle. Who gave those to me for Christmas. So the next two people who buy t-shirts are also going to get $25 gift certificates to Olive Garden. Enjoy. All right, this is Widower. The song is called Certainly Tonight in the Bright Blue Moonlight. And we'll be back next week with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a good one, everybody.